B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you got to kind of just, you know, these are the bumps that he's going through right now. And he's going to figure this out. And also, too, it's going to be play call. I mean, you know, you come out there and half your weapons are gone within, you know, warm up. So you had to expect a bumpy road, you know, coming in, going into this game. Now the Washington game, you expected it to be a little bit cleaner, but now, you know, this game here, you lose, what, three of your major weapons. So you had to expect some type of, hitches in his giddy up. But I think that overall this week, you're starting to like, all right, now you've had two games under your belt. We need, you know, a little bit more progression. Let's start a little bit quicker. And that's not just on him. It's going to be on the coaches as well, and all two on the offensive line to make sure that they can help him out.
What you said about going into week three, Trey, you know, now it's time to go. That's exactly right. And it's almost like his career, too. All right, now it's the time to go because he's only 42 games in.
Mm-hmm.
He's only 42 games in. He's 2.5 years in. You know, that's not a lot of time. And as you said, Mark, he didn't play a lot of college. Like, he's getting used to a league that is far different from the type of league that he played in a few years ago in college. He's only 42 games in. I agree with Donovan. You got to give him some time. He's okay.
The worst words people can hear about a quarterback, wait and see.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
610-632-0975. You are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPN Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio only from Comcast. 7 o'clock hour is brought to you by Univest Bank. When it comes to business insurance, business as usual does not cut it. You need an insurance partner. You need Univest Insurance. Set up your free consultation and analysis today. Visit Univest. Best.net. Right now, we're going to tell you how you can win $10,000.
97.5, The Fanatic. Big green giveaway.
This hour's keyword is weekend. Weekend. Enter the keyword weekend on the Fanatic app, 97.5thefanatic.com, or texting weekend to 45911 by 8:15 this morning. We'll call you if you're randomly selected, and you'll win $1,000. Everyone that enters on our app or website will be qualified for a $10,000 grand prize. Rules for this nationwide contest are available at 97.5thefanatic.com. Enter the keyword weekend on the Fanatic app, 97.5thefanatic.com, or by texting weekend to 45911 by 8:15 this morning. Our Fanatic 5,000 a day giveaway. 5K a day giveaway. Big green giveaway is presented by the all-new Parks Casino Sportsbook app. Good luck. Without further ado, now on the line with us, brought to you by Xfinity. Stay connected during the biggest moments of every game with Xfinity Internet, delivering reliably fast speeds, even during peak hours when everyone's online. Learn more at Xfinity.com. Welcome in the great, the Hall of Famer, Jason Stark joins us. Jason, good morning.
What's happening there, boys?
Just hanging out. So Mike Trout's still the AL MVP?
I think he is, but I think it's a discussion point. I think there's still an argument for Alex Bregman. I think he is, but I voted in a lot of MVP elections, and narrative plays into it. And a guy who doesn't play the last 3 weeks of the season, it gives somebody the opportunity to make a case. But I think he's going to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks that way. Now, the other side of this is that the Phillies are now 5 games out of the wild card in the National League. The Brewers are 1 game out of the final wild card spot in the National League. And they just lost Christian Yelich, yet they've won 3 in a row. How does that work?
yeah, how about that? You know, it's amazing how 2 years in a row now in September, the Brewers have done exactly this. Now, last year they did it because of Christian Yelich, but I think when you do it once, it fuels belief. And that team is amazing. Their resilience, their positivity, they're just something about the vibe around the Brewers where this is what they expect to do. I think you're implying that you don't sense that same vibe around the Phillies?
No, I don't get it. I don't get it even a little bit, Jason, and it's unfortunate. Because I don't, like, I do love baseball, and I love the Phillies, and growing up as a sports fan in this city, I mean, that was, like, my first favorite team, the Phillies, right? And that's kind of what I always go back to just in fandom. So I always want them to do well, but I got to be honest, And when we talked last week, we were already turning the page to next year, and we're already looking forward to see if they make that move with JT Realmuto. And it seems like, especially with what you gave up to get him, that's the thing people are going to be focusing on in terms of taking care of business in-house before you go and you make an addition to maybe the pitching staff.
Well, it's not the only thing people be focusing
no,
on.
No, of course not. Yeah.
Better.
Yeah.
But that's a major priority, and I'd really be surprised if that doesn't get done. You know, it's almost funny. I know, you know, Bob and I last week were talking about we think this guy is the best catcher to pass through Philadelphia that we can ever remember, mm-hmm. right, in our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. People were complaining about it, but take a step back and look at this guy. He leads the team in slugging. He leads all catchers, not just in throwing out base dealers, but stealing bases. Do you know that he's got a faster Statcast sprint speed than D. Gordon? Yes, he does. He's an incredible base runner. I mean, I watched him beat out that infield single the other day. He's in the top 20 in the league in infield hits. He plays his butt off, and he can run. There's nothing he can't do.
No.
He's the best catcher in the game. And if he wants to be here, you got to get him signed.
Now, I am of the school that no matter what, you're speaking with Jason Stark, the Hall of Famer from The Athletic. Jason, I'm of the school that I'm out on Gabe Kapler. We've talked about that. However, if I'm a betting man, I'm betting he is making his return. Do you think that's the case? And also, just overall, going into this long road trip, 11 games, how would you evaluate Gabe Kapler as a manager this year?
I think he's been better, but I think your first question there is, do I think he's coming back?
Mm-hmm.
And the honest answer is, I think it's a topic for debate inside that front office.
Ooh, ooh.
I mean, I don't think the general manager, if it were just up to him, would fire Gabe. But I think there's going to be a lot of conversations with a lot of people about how they're going to handle this. And I don't really know the answer. I really don't.
See, I'll say this,
they're
Jason.
I can tell you, they're not just going to bring back the entire coaching staff, and I don't even think the entire front office intact if this season ends the way we think it's going to end.
Right. Now, I'll say this. I agree with you that if it's only Matt Klentak making the decisions, then he's definitely back. But if you put Andy McPhail in that room, who I think, and I'll ask you about that in a second, but if you put Andy McPhail in that room, as well as John Middleton, and maybe the Buck Cousins as well, and that triumvirate of ownership, I think that's really where the pressure might come as far as, now tell me why I should be paying Gabe Kapler to be the manager for another year, even though he's still under contract. But I think it really comes down to Middleton, McPhail, and obviously Klentak.
Yeah, especially John Middleton.
Yeah.
Well, if you go back and ask, why did the hitting coach get fired? I mean, they've never said this was John Middleton's idea, but don't we think he pushed for that?
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Yeah, certainly.
Right? And I would say the forces that drove him to push them to do that could drive him to push them to do other things. And how many other things, how extensive they are, I don't know. It's interesting because they could be in a position where some big name managers are available, right? I mean, if the Cubs don't win Joe Maddon, it's hard to believe he's going to be back. Joe Girardi's been sitting out there for 2 years. Buck Showalter's been sitting out there for a year. I mean, they're going to have some big name options, and it's a good job. But I don't really like talking about the next manager when there's still a current manager.
Sure, sure, sure.
That's an uncomfortable place to be.
Right.
He might be back, but they've got options, and I don't know how they cannot think about those options.
If, Jason, if you were a betting man, I've seen so many different things about Adam Haseley, whether he's a guy that they should keep here, a guy that could be your starting everyday outfielder next year, exactly where he might be. I think he's pretty intriguing. Where, ideally, would he be in this Phillies organization next year?
Well, you know, he's got a lot of work to do offensively.
Right.
I mean, he really struggles with off speed. And so that's a big question about, is he an everyday player if he's going to have this much trouble handling breaking stuff? Is there going to be enough power? But, I mean, we've seen that he's a big league outfielder at any position, right? He's been their best defensive outfielder this last month, right? He's made more five-star plays than anybody in their outfield, on their team. The only other five-star play by any quote-unquote outfielder the whole season was Vince Velasquez. So he's a big league player. But I think he was always viewed as a high floor, fairly low ceiling type guy. I mean, they've got a lot of questions to answer about their outfield, and he's one of them. It'd be helpful to know how healthy Andrew McCutchen's going to be next year. It'd be interesting to try to contemplate if he were the center fielder at least a good portion of the time. Would that enable you to bring back Corey Dickerson? If you bring back Corey Dickerson, how does Adam Haseley fit?
Right.
You're setting right. Fitting the pieces into the puzzle. It's going to be interesting.
Speaking with Jason Starr from The Athletic, Jason, two final things for you. One, what I get out of the front office brass of the Phillies is I think that it is Matt Klentak's show that he's running. And I get the sense that Andy McPhail is more of a sounding board. He's gotten a lot of criticism lately, but do you get that same sense that really this is Klentak's show and McPhail's there as more or less help and overseeing the entire franchise, not just the baseball operations?
Andy's attitude has always been to get out of the way and not interfere and let people who work for him do their jobs. And so, you know, it was interesting because he got to Philadelphia around the same time that Dave Dombrowski got to Boston, and they had pretty much the same position. And yet, David Dombrowski ran that show until they got fired. And Andy's been the opposite. He's really left much of this up to Matt. And I think that's one of the dynamics they probably need to talk about. It's not Andy's nature to be hands-on. He's much more hands-off.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the way the front office functions and, you know, the season that's resulted from that is just another one of those things I think they've got to kick around.
Okay. And, Jason, last thing for you, and we might have discussed this with you in the past, but we threw in another name here. Who's a worse movie character? Is it Jenny from Forrest Gump? Is it Grandpa Joe from Willy Wonka? Or is it Rose from Titanic? Who's the worst of those three?
Who's the worst?
The worst human being of those three.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
let's go through the options again now.
Okay, we got Jenny from Forrest Gump. Horrible person. She had a disease. She almost gave it to Forrest. Then we also have Rose from Titanic, let her new lover die as she was cheating on her fiance. Or Grandpa Joe, that lazy bum that finally got off his ass only because he could go to a chocolate factory.
Yeah, I'm still a little scarred by Jenny, I have to admit.
See, there we go. You're a wise man.
Is that the right answer?
That's the just
I like how Jason said he was scarred by Jenny. Wow, you really took that personal, huh, Jace?
Did that story hit close to home, Jason? You can tell me. You can tell me.
Have you been in a boat accident?
Too much into it.
Jason, always great talking to you, man. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
I appreciate it.
Damn, Jenny hit home, huh?
Yeah.
Hall of Famer confirms
it. It's news now. Tweet it out. All right, here we go. I like that Jason plays my dumb little game at the end of every interview. God bless that man. Jason Stark brought to you by Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks. Why strike out with a boring soda when you can hit a grand slam with Everfresh Juices and Juice Drinks, available at your neighborhood store? Everfresh, nature's refreshment. Coming up, we'll discuss a little bit more with Donovan McNabb in terms of what he said could the Eagles offense could really use. Mm-hmm. And if anybody knows this aspect of the game, it certainly is Donovan. We'll jump into that. Take your calls. We got Warren, Drew, John, Chris. You guys stay right there. Time of the Fanatic is 8:14.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
8 o'clock hour brought to you by Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers. Visit PAWorkInjury.com. My thanks to Jason Stark once again for joining us. Trey, you didn't like that dancing you saw yesterday, right? The Falcons dancing around?
No. Nope.
Week 2 champions of the night game of Sunday?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, that's great. The other story that a lot of people are kicking around, and we're going to get back to the Donovan McNabb stuff that we got from yesterday's interview with Donovan in a second. But go get Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line from today. When you went to, probably when you were tucking yourself in last night, you might have laid down with some thoughts of the Eagles going out there and getting Minkah Fitzpatrick. You might have woken up to the news, it happened through the night, that Minkah Fitzpatrick actually got traded to the Steelers. So, not happening in Philadelphia. He went for, I believe it was off the top of my head, what, a first-round pick from the Steelers, which will be pretty good considering Ben Roethlisberger's out. Mm-hmm. So if you're the Miami Dolphins, you're thinking, that's going to be a pretty good pick. Mm-hmm. I believe a fourth and a sixth, I believe, was the picks that were actually put together here. The trade actually was the Dolphins get a first-round pick, a fifth-round pick, and a sixth-round pick in not this coming draft, but the following draft. The Steelers get Minkah Fitzpatrick. They get a 2020 fourth-rounder and a 2021 sixth-rounder. So if Howie Roseman loses out on Jadeveon Clowney, and he loses out on Minkah Fitzpatrick, he's got to go get Jalen, right?
Yeah.
He's got to go get Jalen Ramsey.
Yes.
Did they get torched in the first two games this season? What are the numbers, Bob? Over 700 yards?
700 yards, exactly. That's 350 a game, Mark.
Howie needs to wow me.
Okay.
I need to be Howie wowed.
Okay.
That's what I need. Right now, I need Howie to go out there and make that wow move that he's made over the last couple of years. Golden Tate didn't have as much of an impact. He's still got a great player. Still got a guy that can get it done for you. He certainly got done in the playoffs for you, Golden Tate did. The year before that, it was Jay Ajayi. Go make a move right now for a guy that can help your defense immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Jalen Ramsey brings to the table. I know there's drama. I know there's a big contract looming at the end of that for a guy that wants to show up to training camp in a Brinks truck the way Jalen Ramsey did. But go get it done. He makes you better immediately. Warren, Cherry Hill, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Warren?
Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Hey, Warren.
Got to ask you a couple things. First, before they should stop panicking when it comes to Carson. He pretty much played with Mo, Larry, and Curly, and I'm not insulting Aguilar, but we saw what he is. So what I'm more puzzled with, you know, they kept talking about Reich and everything like that. Doug Peterson, I want to know whether scripted or not. It's now over a year. It's over 1 year, and it wasn't just Wentz. It's Foles and whoever else. They don't come out right. I don't know the answer for this, but it's not a once-in-a-while thing. They come out, and the first quarter, it's when I'm looking, from what I understand, they came in 30th or close to last in the league in first quarter. There's something wrong there. So that's something you got to fix. I don't care what they talk about our defensive line. To me, it's almost like they're just names. I hear about Fletcher Cox. I hear about this one. But honest to God, I only use the eye test. I was never a professional player like you, Trey. Mm. So when I watch a game, I can only go by what I see and not the trenches. But no matter what I see, whether Schwartz is blitzing more or not, I can't believe our secondary is this bad. We got lucky. I don't want to say lucky to beat Washington, but they blew two touchdown passes in that game. The kid, yeah, Ryan, he didn't play very well, and he still had another touchdown or two that he overthrew one to Ridley. So I want to know whether it's they got to put more pressure on, they need better players, they need a better scheme, or is it really Schwartz? So I don't know what to say with this, but I'm watching a team with professional players. It's not like they're throwing it through a needle. These guys are so wide open, a high school guy could hit it.
Well, look, Jim Schwartz is not the guy that's the target of my criticism after a game like this.
But I'm asking, I just want to know what it is.
Well, I mean, it is, a lot of it is personnel, but I mean, we talked about it yesterday, Trey. Uh-huh. The scheme was actually a good scheme that Jim Schwartz had in this. Ronald Darby got beat a lot. One, eventually from Rodney McLeod, there was some over-the-top help, but thanks for the call, Warren. But if you had to say right now, scheme or personnel, What are you pointing your finger at right now in terms of the overall performance over the last 2 weeks?
Well, your personnel is going to affect your scheme. Sure. So for me, it looks like, you know, you don't have the secondary that can go out there and really just shut down receivers. I mean, when you have, like I said yesterday, when you have Ryan has 43 passes and the average time was 2.2 seconds, that shows that your coverage was just a little too lax. You need to cut that down, especially when you want to create pressure from your down four. You know, you go back and now you look at what Carson, the flip side of it, Carson had 43 passes as well. His average throw time was 3 seconds. So, you know, that's a big difference where, you know, their secondary was giving us some problems, you know, shutting that, creating more time. Ours, on the other end, they were allowed to dink and dunk and working their way down the field. And, oh, yeah, here comes a big one over the top. So you had to create pressure by sending the blitz. Now, sometimes that opens you up, you know, to you know, exposing your secondary. But I think that, you know, which one do you want?
Mm.
You know, of course you want to go out there and pressure the quarterback, but, you know, do you have the secondary to say, all right, you know what, you lock down that man? And you don't.
Well, it seemed like on Sunday they had a much better game plan than what they did in the first game of the season against the Redskins.
You were sending a lot more blitz.
Mm-hmm.
You were creating pressure. I mean, we and you only came out of there with one sack. And that was from a safety.
Right.
Yeah. It was different. It was different. It was aggressive. And they only gave up 24 points. So, in that way, because we look at this Eagles offense as one that will outscore teams, 24 points going down to Atlanta before at the beginning of the season, if you had told us that, would we have been happy with it? Maybe.
Uh-huh.
You know, but scheme, I still think Schwartz is trying to figure out schemes. I guess because it was vastly different from week one to week two.
And he's blitzed, I believe, Matt Ryan more so than any other quarterback he's faced.
I think that was the most blitzing we've ever seen from him as defensive coordinator, and maybe in a game.
And I think the interesting thing that you brought up earlier, Bob, is whether or not this is going to be a changing of the guard. No, not changing of the guard, but a changing of mentality and approach for Jim Schwartz. You don't have Malik Jackson now. You don't have Tim Jernigan for, what is it going to be now, 2 to 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks? Like, you don't know how long.
Yeah.
You're going to be missing him quite some time. You're going to Akeem Spence, who you just picked up. You're going to Hassan Ridgeway, who is going to be fighting his way onto this playing field more and more now because of the lack of depth at that position, how far down the depth chart you've already had to go.
Right.
So is this the new way to get after the quarterback? Because you can't rely on the weapons you had up front originally, the horses you had up front originally? Are you going to have to rely on those corner blitzes, those safety blitzes, those to get that pressure? Are you going to have to send linebackers now? Now, more it was safeties than it was linebackers right. going after the quarterback, but are you going to have to get more creative now as Jim Schwartz when you know more than ever as Eagles defensive coordinator that what you rely on for pass pressure, what you rely on in the past, is not going to be as good as what you've had in years past. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to rely on doing more of the unconventional things for at least Jim Schwartz's traditional game plan to get to the quarterback and get that pressure.
Well, I think you send in the blitz because you're saying, all right, you know what? I don't think our guys can't shut down the receiver, so we need to hurry up and get in that quarterback's face now. You know, because, you know, even with just regular protection, guys are going to hold your guy. They're going to be able to hold DNs and D tackles just long enough to get rid of the ball. But I mean, when you go back and you look at that, Ryan, you have a stopwatch in your hand and you see him getting rid of the ball at 1.5, 1.7, 1.8. I mean, there were a couple passes that was under a second where he was just, hey, get it and let it go.
Right.
Where, you know, 0.8 seconds of getting rid of the ball. So I don't care who you put out there, D-line. They're not going to be able to get there if you have anybody out there that can block. You know what I'm saying? So, that, you know, you can put anybody out there to just get in front of you for a second or two. But now you have a situation where you're like, all right, our secondary isn't going to be able to hold these guys for 2 seconds. I got to get somebody to come through clean. We have to send somebody that's not accounted for in the blocking scheme to just come through clean, to kind of rush that quarterback, to get rid of the ball and make a bad decision. And it's just that we got caught with that tight receiver screen.
It's like a chicken egg type of thing. You know, your defensive line isn't getting there quick enough. So alone, so that they help out your secondary because making the quarterback throw it quickly. And then they're not good enough, Trey, as you've pointed out over and over, the secondary's not good enough at covering to allow the D-line to get there. It just seems
I don't know what that is.
Something's going on.
Somebody's singing in the hallway.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But it just seems to be deficiencies on both sides. Mm. And that's, you mentioned, like, all right, was the defense not good enough? What are we pointing at that's been really good from the defense so far?
Nothing has been outstanding.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's, oh, God, it's horrible, but it's just not good enough right now, in my opinion.
They forced three turnovers, so that's a good thing.
Right? And all because of what Trey pointed out. They put pressure on the quarterback on those three turnovers.
Mm. They got the pressure.
That'd be nice to be able to get pressure without blitzing, wouldn't it?
That's not happening.
Sure, but
you need the coverage.
Yeah, how confident
are
you?
And that's not happening.
Yeah.
I think pressure on the quarterback's a bigger concern than the secondary, to be honest.
Well, but right
just
now,
my opinion.
But right now you're going to be pulling from your secondary in order to get that pass rush. Because you're not getting
home. But if you have that pass rush, your secondary can play their game.
No Malik Jackson now. Tim Jernigan, right. So what I'm saying
Derek
is
Derek Barnett's approaching Mamula territory. Almost got him.
It's getting dangerous, but that's what I'm saying. Your defensive line is taking such a hit. Where's the pass rush going to come? Hey, if Derek Barnett wants to all of a sudden have that 10-sack game without the interior pressure that we were counting on going into the season, then more power to you, Derek Barnett, but I'm not confident he's going
to
do that.
I just don't know who at this point is going to step up in the pass rush game to do it without blitzing.
Well,
and I think that it's a vicious cycle.
Well, that exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Is this the new, and that's the point Bob's making earlier, is that
one of the two has to work.
Is this the new Jim Schwartz game plan? Where
I think it's just because Matt Ryan has a little duty in his pants when the pressure comes. So I think that was more specific to the Falcons game than it will be for every weekend.
So to use your point, does Jim Schwartz now make more people duty? Does he make more people duty?
I think it depends on the quarterback.
All right, but if your scheme doesn't adjust to your personnel,
he clearly doesn't like blitzing.
Aren't you damned? Oh, of course he doesn't. But could he have a defensive line that has lost key players like Tim Jernigan and Malik Jackson within the span of 2 weeks and not adjust the game plan? Can he just go on as business as usual?
I mean,
I would hope not. That seems to me like you need to make some kind of adjustment.
I don't know. It's a really vicious cycle they're in right
now. Derek Barnett wasn't getting home with that pressure on the interior. Now all of a sudden he's going to do it. I'm not confident in that. So it's going to have to come from your secondary.
BG's never been that guy, really. I mean, I think his career high is 8 sacks.
Or maybe ask a linebacker to do something.
Also, let's not forget that it was mentioned on air the other night about Fletcher Cox not being 100%.
Exactly, yeah.
And so you're not getting that push.
You're a $100 million player. It'd be nice to see a little bit more pressure. I know he's not 100% healthy, but it's been kind of invisible the first two games a little bit.
Everything that you thought of this defense as outsiders looking in, oh, the secondary is going to be improved. That interior defensive line is phenomenal. That'll help the outside guys get there. None of that has come to fruition so far. So Jim Schwartz is forced to juggle and do what he did the other night. This is going to be really interesting now moving forward, much like the offense, if they have to move forward without their superstars. It's going to be interesting what Jim Schwartz either continues to do or changes up to do with this defense.
Now, I have heard sometimes a strong offense can be your best defense.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever heard that, Trey?
Yeah.
Heard that? And maybe the offense stays on the field a little bit longer to spell that defense just a little bit.
Run the ball.
And one of the things, yes, exactly. One of the things Donovan McNabb got into yesterday when we talked to him was they more or less abandoned that run. Now, they ran the ball, I believe, 21 times in total against the Falcons, and they did not have a lot of success. Despite not having a lot of success, they still ran the ball over 20 times. I don't recall too many times that happened in the Andy Reid era, Trey. Can you remember any moments like that?
Oh, man, we heard it out.
So Donovan has a pretty good sense of that, as you do as well, Trey. But there's one particular play that Donovan's talking about that absolutely disappeared. First, he tried to comfort us a little bit in saying that the Eagles are still a top team in this league. Here's how Donovan broke down. This was more or less his reaction after the Eagles' struggles on Sunday.
As far as the team is concerned, I'm not getting down on them by any means. I still think they're one of the best teams in the NFC. They're going to get it together. It was just a rough game to watch on Sunday night.
A little rough, right? But here's how you can change things around. Every once in a while, Eagles offense be struggling. There wouldn't be a throw downfield. West Coast offense wasn't working that great when it came to, you know, slant routes and five and ins and all that fun stuff, right?
Right.
So you'd see Brian Westbrook all of a sudden out of nowhere. The next thing you know, he'd catch a little pass around the line of scrimmage, some offensive line in front of me, taking the rest of the way. Donovan's asking a question here. Let's hear what he's asking.
Where's the screen game? You have Sanders, who can run the football, who reminds me so much of a Brian Westbrook. Where's the screen?
Where'd it go?
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere to be found.
And you know what was great about the screen game when Trey was playing was, as people who watched Eagles games for years, every game for years and years and years, as fans, we knew sometimes when it was coming, but it didn't matter. I'm sure defense is probably not, but Trey and those guys were so good at getting out in front. Westbrook was so good at avoiding that it worked perfectly. Trey made a great point months ago saying, you know, it's hard to run it anymore with these athletic defensive ends. They read it well. The offense might not hide it as well as Trey and those guys did. And they just don't seem to be run as much, not just by the Eagles, but I think throughout the league, you don't see it all that much.
It's become, everything is now kind of like that receiver screen now.
Right.
You see receiver screens now, because now you don't have to get it's only the tackle that's going to take off upfield, or, you know, because now, and what it is that these doggone athletic defensive tackles are the ones that are blowing it up, because because you would always be, all right, punch the guy, and then throw him to the side, and then everybody takes off and goes to whatever their landmarks are. But these athletic D tackles now, I didn't just beat you that clean. Where's the running back?
Yeah.
And then they get in pursuit. But just one thing real quick, I want to go back to this whole thing with the pass rush. You had 10 pass plays in their first two series against Atlanta. Only two of those plays went over 2 seconds. And it was 2.5 and 2.4. Only two plays out of their first 10 or 12 passes went over over 2 seconds.
Who's getting to the quarterback in that time?
Who's getting to the quarterback in that time?
And doesn't it seem like offenses can dictate so easily against the Eagles what they want to do? You know, like, we've said it all along. All right, look, the way to beat the Eagles, you know, you get rid of the ball quickly and you go, well, we've been saying it for 32 games now. Mm-hmm. You know, since last year, this year, you know, that's what teams want to do, but they still seem to be able to keep doing it and doing it and doing it.
Now, again, no one's getting, you made the point yesterday, Trey, about Reggie White's not getting to the quarterback. A defensive line of Reggie White's not getting to the quarterback in, you know, second and a half, 2 seconds. But someone does ask a fair question on Twitter. Asafo tweets us saying,
that's our buddy Lennon Sweets. I was just going to throw this at you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right, he says, most impactful pass rusher in the Eagles preseason. Hasn't even suited up yet.
I don't even know why
Josh Sweat didn't outperform him in the preseason, yet he's getting snaps. And Deshaun Hall, a guy that looked like he showed a lot of promise, not to be seen.
I don't know why.
What's the preseason for?
Yeah.
Like, he made the roster, but he was one of not even the team's, the overall preseason's best pass rushers.
Right. Chris in Northeast, you stay right there. First up on the other side, we got Mike, Dave, and Tim, 610-632-0975. Coming up, we talked to Rodney McLeod a couple of weeks back about a great event he's taking part in. We'll hear from him. I'll let you hear him promote this wonderful event from that conversation we had a couple of months back. That's what's coming up in a few here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the Morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Coming up, we'll give you an update on our Twitter poll brought to you by Window Nation. We'll also hear from Rodney McLeod about a great event he's got going on. We talked to him a couple of months back. He'll sum it up for you perfectly coming up in a little bit. But Chris, the Northeast, been holding quite some time. Let's talk about those birds. What's up, Chris?
What's up, guys?
Hey, man, thanks for holding.
No worries. Listen to you guys every morning. Love the show. Trey, a few minutes ago, you said something about as far as nobody, not even Reggie White, is going to get to the quarterback that fast. To use like 2 second time frame, you said. So isn't that more reason to not have the corners lining up 10 yards away from the receiver?
Absolutely. You want them to be a little bit more. You need them to play a little bit more physical on the receivers to throw out the timing. When you give up that much cushion, then now you're opening yourself up to all the little dink and dunk passes that's been happening.
Right. Another thing, too, I think I'm with Jamie a little bit. I feel a lot of the Eagles' success in the past was due to Frank Reich. I mean, now that we've got Mike Rowe, you see the troubles with the first quarter. How do you go a whole game and not throw one screen? Like, that's like an Eagles staple, kind of, sort of. And to go the whole game and not throw one, it's like, who's really calling the... I mean, obviously Mike's calling the plays, but it's like, that's just unacceptable.
Well, no, Mike's not calling the plays. Doug's calling the plays.
Really? That's even worse.
Chris, thanks for the call, brother. All right. Yeah, no, Doug's calling the show. So, where I was going to go with this... Well, you got some Florida State news for you. All right?
Yeah.
You're going to be okay?
Yeah, it hurts a little bit. Our record right now is 6-9.
Willie Taggart, 6-9 as head coach.
It could be worse. It could be 6-10, and you don't even have the chuckle when you say your record.
I know, but. Yeah.
Dark days for the Seminoles.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good.
It's not good.
What? 6-9?
What the hell were we talking about? Oh, Doug Peterson.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to the point that he was talking about, Reich and Groh, it's not the play calling, it's the game plan. It's what you come up with throughout the week and scripting, you know, the infamous first 15.
The reason the Eagles are struggling so much in the early goings of games,
yes,
in the first quarter most notably, is because Frank Reich's not here
to. I mean, it's impossible not to look at 2017, seeing them the best team in the NFL in the first quarter, what they are.
That's your theory, but if you take it to the next level.
Oh.
Are we giving Doug Peterson too much credit as a good offensive mind?
Possibly.
Are we now? But
I think he's good.
Okay. So we take it to the next level.
I think he was multiplied by two with Frank Reich at his right hand side.
All right. So let's put it this way, as an offensive minded head coach who doesn't call plays, how far away is Doug Peterson from Jason Garrett in your mind?
Whoa.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, going to the extreme.
Well, I mean,
I'm going to the extreme.
I mean, everybody's raving about the new look Cowboys offense,
Kellen Moore. And that's why I bring it up.
I mean, I think a lot of what makes Doug great is his balls, to put it lightly.
That's pretty heavy right there. Well, they might be heavy ones.
As Trey would say, they're on the table right
now. He's a good offensive mind. He's a quarterback. He's been around the league for a long time.
So is Jason Garrett?
Yeah.
I'm just taking your theory.
I think a lot of what makes him a great head coach is reading the game. I think he's good at time management. I think he's good at balls. I think he's good at motivating his team. When it comes to offensive play calling,
taking chances,
and creativity. I mean, I'd like to think he's better than Jason Garrett, but I can't tell you that. He was at his best. The offense was at its best when Frank Reich was here.
I can tell you he's better than Jason Garrett.
He's better than Jason Garrett.
And I can tell you he's better at game planning.
Totally.
He's better at calling a game.
But I'm sure Jason Garrett can design some pretty nice plays. He's better when he has Kellen Moore. Same as Doug is better when he has Frank Reich. It's not saying that he's bad. It's just he's better with somebody like that at his side.
So he should just scrap the first 15. Don't even worry about it. Don't even go over this. Let's just go with what we feel.
I mean, is having Carson maybe not be in shotgun so much and at the line and letting him have a little more freedom to call an audible? Like, you don't hear the kills. You don't hear as much change as it used to be.
Is
that the worst idea in the world, to let him have a little more control?
I think he does have control over what's going on. I mean, it's going to be predicated off of what the defense shows you. So whatever the play is, you know, you can walk up to the line of scrimmage and be like, oh, we're going to run this particular play. And then, you know what? Check. So I think that that's still there, but with that being said, do you think they should just be like, all right, you know what? Scripting the plays is not working. Let's just go with how we feel.
When is their offense at its best with Carson Wentz? Because I wrote this down a couple weeks ago, and I never brought it up. It seems like when they're in desperation mode, when they're in no huddle, when they're quick, that seems to be when their offense is at. You get behind in a game. Mm-hmm. Boom, here they come. You know, they're starting out slow. They're constantly getting behind. When they have to pick it up, second half the other night, you're behind. You know, here you go. You go down 20-7, it gets better. You get behind in games, it gets better. Why isn't it good from the outcome? Is there something different there? Maybe Trey's onto something. Scratch those 15.
I think they're at their best when Carson Wentz is able to freelance a little.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Hurry up offense. He's got people off balance. He could take advantage of that. This offense, and I hate saying this in week three, when healthy, it's pretty damn fast, especially with a guy like DeSean Jackson. And Nelson Agholor is no slouch either when it comes to just game speed. And Alshon Jeffrey can go up and get it if you're trying to stretch the field. With their tight ends, they can play a short game and play quick. They have the backfield to also play well. And Donovan's right. The screen game shouldn't be a lost art, especially when you have Jason Kelce. Part of what makes him such a special talent, and what, a three-time, four-time Pro Bowler?
Next-level blocking.
The fact that he can get off the line of scrimmage and make those blocks downfield. Why am I not using that if I'm Doug Peterson in my game plan? Why am I not using it? Now, I believe, maybe not scripting is the wrong word, but having a better game plan going into the game is something that the Eagles need to establish. Maybe that is Frank Reich. Maybe we're giving way too much credit to Doug Peterson.
And to Donovan's point yesterday, they're a play-action team at their heart.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have a run game established, really impossible to do play action. And that's when I think they're at their best, is when play action is an option.
Wow.
And you can't abandon the run. Look, it wasn't working on Sunday. We all saw that.
Mm.
The offensive line wasn't getting the push they normally do. That doesn't mean you abandon it. Like, I know that sounds a little dumb on its surface, but you can't abandon it.
No, you have to let them know the threat is there.
53 to 21 is not a balanced ratio. And it doesn't have to be 50-50, but it's got to be, you know, 60-40 is balanced.
It was only 18 handoffs to the running backs, too.
Yeah.
Three of those were Wentz.
So,
there you go.
18 is not enough.
Let's get Dave in New York. What's up, Dave?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey. Good morning.
Hey, I think I've got an idea that might fix this whole thing, like, immediately.
Go for it. What do you got?
And this should be brought into the meeting today. The Eagles are showing their hands. There's tells going on. Just little things like every time Carson pulls his shoulder pad right before they hike the ball, that means he's going to pass. Head turns, even the way you put your mouthpiece in before you hike the ball, the QB tells, the running back tells, the line tells, even the defensive tells. It's like becoming a good poker player. You can't show your hand. And I think the Eagles need to mix it up. So when there's certain tweaks where every human being does the same thing. Okay, it's going to be a deep pass, and their body makes a movement.
All right, Dave, hold on. I like these. You're watching the film. You're paying close attention. Let's go to the greatest football mind we have in this room. His name is Trey Thomas. Trey, do you see the tells?
They do have some tells.
This is the key. This is the key to winning this week and winning for years to come. The best quarterback that ever played, Joe Montana, he never moved.
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.